Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
Hello and you're very welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm Frances Nesbitt from Crowan Cottages and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey from Hedgehog Bakery. And we're live today, Friday, from 4 to 5 and the show is repeated on Monday at the same time from 4 to 5. Now while we're in the studio, we would love to hear from you, so please feel free to send us any questions or comments that you might have. And we're still gathering up ideas for the show for during the year, so if you have any bright ideas or topics that you'd like us to cover in the studio on the show during the year, please let us know. You can drop us a text to 086 353 7782, or you can send us an email at any stage during the week, kitchengarden@crkc.ie. Now on the show today, it's a busy show as usual. We're going to have a little bit of food news. We're going to speak to a nutritionist later in the show about New Year resolutions and getting ourselves in shape and eating healthily. We're going to get some seasonal recipes. We're going to talk a little bit about birds. We're going to finish off that topic that we were covering last week on barn owls. Myself and Mags have been out to see a murmuration in sunny Ballyhale. And we're going to finish up the show then with a little talk about jobs to be doing in the garden. But before we begin today, a very special hello to Sophie and Alan, who are out visiting with my kids and are tuned in, I hope, out at Crowan today, our youngest and newest listeners. Hello to you lads. I hope you're having a nice time and being good. Mags, how are you?
I'm very good.
And how was your week?
Full of root vegetables and birds, actually.
Root vegetables, yes. And birds. Actually, yes. I saw the Irish Times was talking about turnips versus Swedes this week. I don't know whether you saw that.
I didn't see that, actually. I did. The turnips are getting quite a bit of mention in the media, actually, at the moment. Well, they're seasonal. They should be.
Yes.
We should all be eating them. That's exactly what we should be eating now, not tomatoes and courgettes. We should be having...
every Wednesday when I was a kid. Every Wednesday
turnips.
We had mashed potatoes, mashed turnip and a chop. And that was our dinner of a Wednesday.
Yeah. Well, my father grew a field of turnips for the sheep.
Oh.
So we got turnips from the field. So we didn't take them, the sheep ate them.
You ate the same diet as the sheep.
I have to say, I
sheep.
Wasn't a big fan of turnip when I was a kid.
I miss it, actually. Now that you've mentioned
it,
I haven't had it in years.
Well, do you want to? You could do so many. We actually, this week now, we've had a lot of turnip. My children are probably going to get a little bit tired of it. But and other root vegetables. So it doesn't have to be all turnip. So if you think about parsnips, carrots, turnips, and there's different types. You know, there's the turnips and the Swedes, or you can get little, nice little white turnips. So there's loads of different variety and lots of different colours in that. And there's still beetroot. I still have beetroot in the ground. So
I love beetroot. It's become my favourite vegetable.
And
I think
so
it's so
good for you.
Flexible. So many things you can do with it. It's just
fabulous colour and everything.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
really
it is. But you can make like literally a simple mash. So you could use Swedes, carrots, potatoes.
Swedes, carrots and potatoes. Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit of butter and a little bit of nutmeg.
Okay.
Just as a simple mash to have with any sort of a roast dinner or any kind of a regular weekday dinner and that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's perfectly easy. If you have kids who are not mad into too much of a turnipy flavour, that's a slightly milder flavour to start off with.
Okay. I have a boy who's not really into celeriac, another root veg. He's not really into the flavour of celeriac.
Yeah.
But when combined with potatoes, I did a boulanger, so, sliced and done as a gratin, but with stock instead of cream. He loved it. Really loved it.
Sometimes if they don't overthink it beforehand, they actually, they're okay with it. But if you're going to, let's say mashed turnip, the best way to do it is to actually roast the turnip first. It brings out the sweetness.
Oh.
So you peel your turnip, chop it up, pop it into a dish with some oil and cover it in some greaseproof paper or something into the oven for 20 minutes or so until it's nice and soft, and then mash it with your masher. Add a little bit of butter. And some black pepper, and it's slightly nicer than just mashing it from boiled.
Yeah.
When you mash it from boiled, you kind of get a watery taste sometimes.
Yes.
So that gives it a nicer depth of flavour and a little bit more sweet, just very tasty.
Now, do you know what I love about talking about food with you? There's just one little trip I never thought of. I just never thought of doing it. And a simple little thing.
Very simple.
Like, adds 15 minutes maybe to the cooking time. Like, but just, I'm going to try that.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Anna, you're going to absolutely love this next one.
Okay.
So it's a roasted selection of vegetables.
Okay.
So you can have your parsnips, swedes, carrots. You could put some butternut squash in if you wish, and beetroot. So everything except the beetroot, you want to give it a little parboil for like 7 or 8 minutes, and then all into your heated oven dish. Add your beetroot in and some couple of sprigs of thyme into the oven, and a couple of cloves of garlic into the oven for about 40 minutes. And that's just fabulous, and it looks really good. And
well, everything looks red now, because whenever I roast any veg with beetroot, everything goes red.
No, it doesn't. It won't with this.
Are you sure?
I'm absolutely sure. Yeah.
Whenever I roast veg, Megs,
little bits, but that's okay.
I keep beetroot separate. I actually roast the beetroot separate.
Oh, do you?
Because otherwise everything just looks red.
No, I don't think so.
Anyway, okay.
Try it again.
Okay, well, maybe
try it properly this time.
If listeners try it, they might let us know next week how they get on with that.
And the thyme is nice. Thyme is a nice mix, nice herb with those. And in season again, you might even have it in the garden.
Okay.
There's still lots of thyme out there.
There is. It's been so mild. It really has been so mild. There's greenery about the place.
There is, isn't there?
You never see greenery.
Yeah.
I'm still cutting grass and feeding it up to the animals. In the lawnmower. I always feel like a kind of takeaway driver when I drive up with a box full of grass for the animals and drop it over the fence. They love it.
They must love to hear the lawnmower coming on.
They do. Now they've associated the sound of any petrol engine with food and they start bawling when they hear it.
Animals love grass. There's no substitute for it.
No,
really,
there isn't. They would leave behind a rick full of hay and the fodder beet that's lying on the ground, and they would run over to the mound of grass and they'd beat each other senseless to get at it. They love it.
That's in their... Their makeup or whatever. Carrot and parsnip mash, very traditional. I remember my grandmother cooking it, very old fashioned, perfectly lovely. I really like it. I think that's lovely with roast beef or something.
It is really nice.
Any kind of the root vegetables mashed are really nice, I think, with roast beef, a bit of horseradish cream or something, and roast potatoes.
Mm.
Lovely dinner. Or another thing, you know, we eat a lot of carrots, I think, in this country, and when we were kids and stuff, my mother used to buy like a sack of carrots, not a bag of carrots.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so we'd carrots probably every day for 18 years, maybe, I don't know. But you could roast carrots with a little bit of butter, a little bit of cumin, and a little bit of orange zest, just for something different.
Mm.
Nice new flavour and stuff. Cumin in general works well with root vegetables. Well, with beetroot it works really well. It works well with carrots too.
It does. And just as an extension to that, I read a recipe during the week which was talking about curried roast carrots. So instead of your sprinkle of cumin on it, you'd sprinkle a little curry powder.
Oh, okay.
And roast your carrots that way. And apparently it's very good. I haven't tried it yet, but it's in the folder for me to do one day for the kids. So,
very good.
Yeah. One maybe worth trying.
Yes. Well, but I have one on my list to try, actually, which I just saw today in the paper, was a risotto with turnip, smoked bacon and cider.
Yeah, that does sound good, yeah.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I presume the turnip now you have to prepare before you put it into the risotto.
I didn't actually read the whole thing, but I think you roast it.
Yes,
so chop it up quite finely, roast it, and then add it into your risotto.
Now, as a gardener, I look at turnips, or I think of turnips. When you mention turnip, I think of a Schlitter size vegetable, max, white in colour with green tops.
Okay.
They're turnips. The thing that is about the same size and shape of as your head, I think of as a swede.
Oh, I think that it was a fodder beet.
No. Fodder beet now would be very much larger than that, like a kind of parsnip shape, but enormous. So those purple things that we all grew up calling turnips, they're swedes to me now. Because when you grow the turnips are the small little tiny things that you might roast whole, or, you know, put in a salad or whatever.
Yeah, or you can eat them when they're tiny and
Yeah. So are you talking about roast swede now in your...
Well, both, actually.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, you can use either, to be honest.
Okay.
So swede, like the yellowy fleshed one.
Yeah.
That's the one that you can use for mash or do any of those things with.
It's the one that I had when I was a kid growing up, and I haven't had in years and years and years.
Yeah.
But you've inspired me now. I've actually written it down here. I'm going to go.
Do. And you know what? It's really nice with a little... If you just want to mash it with a tiny bit of cream sometimes, or with some caramelised onion through it. That's very nice too.
I'm starving now. I had lunch not that long ago and I'm already hungry. Did you see in the news that Marie-Claire Digby from Kilkenny, writing in the Irish Times, had an excellent idea for a feature this week? And she knows that it's kind of a tough month for restaurateurs and hoteliers and so on, getting people out, because a lot of people feel a bit broke, you know, and a lot of people are minding themselves and minding what they eat and so on. So restaurants really take a hit, and coffee shops take a hit in January. So she asked everybody, are you doing any specials for January? And she was inundated with responses.
Yes,
and she put up an article on the Irish Times website. It's free. It's not behind a paywall. You can go in and you can have a look at it yourself. And there are some offers in Kilkenny, and then there are some offers all over Ireland, restaurants, hotels, coffee shops and so on, things that they're doing in January to encourage people out and about, because they still have to pay their bills.
They do, yes.
They might have had a busy December and stuff, but you still have to pay staff. You can't let them all go in January.
And we still need to actually get out the odd time, don't we?
That's
a great idea of hers.
It is, fair play to her. She says she's going to repeat it and maybe update it for the month. So check that out on irishtimes.com and just do a search for Marie-Claire Digby or go to the food section and you'll see it there.
Very good. Mm. I did see one other item of good news actually during the week was, and we were talking about the corncrakes, you know, the little birds that are quite endangered. And their numbers are up. So after the count they're up by 8%. So they counted 151 calling males. So huge effort has gone into that.
8% sounds like a big jump, but my God, when you're talking about such small numbers, it's like it's 8 individual birds, really.
But I think there was a lot of years where it was going the other direction.
Yes.
Now they reckon the fine summer had probably something to do with it, because I know in the past an awful lot of rain can like damage the nests and wash them away, and
they get waterlogged.
So the fine summer probably had something to do with that. But that's good news. It's nice to see it.
It's fantastic. Now, should we tell listeners about our visit to the Slobs coming up next week? We'll be talking about our visit. It sounds like great crack, doesn't it? I went to the Slobs this morning. But myself and Mags paid a visit to the Wexford Slobs today, to the wildfowl nature reserve down there, and we saw an amazing amount of birds, and we'll be talking about that in more detail next week. But there's more bird news that we'll be talking about on the show today.
Yes.
But before we finish your report, can we finish your report on the Barnells before
the
break?
Yes.
Before we get to that, just one more piece of food news. Nominations are now open in the 2019 Irish Restaurants Awards. So the online public vote is open now again on the irishtimes.com website. So it's irishtimes.com/Irish Restaurant Awards. And it gives us as diners a chance to nominate our favourite restaurants and coffee shops across 21 categories. And that'll be open until the 23rd of January. So if you have a favourite Kilkenny restaurant, coffee shop or food business, why not go on to irishtimes.com/Irish Restaurant Awards and give it a nomination.
Yes, good reminder. We might bring that up every week.
So it's open until the 23rd of January. And it is, like, it's public vote, all of that.
Yeah.
So it would be good to see some Kilkenny winners.
I have a few in mind I'm going to vote for.
Good stuff. I can think of a couple of excellent training courses out of Crowan Cottages, for example.
Or training courses listed on the
sheet. I don't think so. No, that's just grasping at straws there. Now, last week, I cut you off because we ran out of time. When you were telling us all about Barnells.
Barnells, yes.
Will you remind us what you were saying about Barnells?
Well, I was talking really about the
sorry, we're out of time.
The poor Barnells. They've had a hard time for the last couple of years. But so the numbers were down to, there was a study in the mid-90s, and the numbers were down to like 130 breeding pairs in the country. Now, they're not in absolutely every county, but that's still quite an alarming decline. The decline would have been due to habitat loss, nest site loss, and poisoning from rodenticides. So they're picking up poisoned rats or mice.
So that's secondary poison.
Secondary poison.
So somebody puts down poison, the rat dies, but it dies outdoors, where it can be eaten by something else.
Which is what they tend to do. They go looking for water, isn't it? So, and they get picked up by the Barnell and they get secondary poisoning. There's research going on in the country at the moment by Birdwatch Ireland and the National Parks and Wildlife on the impact of these rodenticides on the birds. And here they rely more on rats and mice than they do in other European countries. So then they tend to suffer more from the secondary poisoning. I suppose other countries had a bigger range of small mammals. We have a relatively small number. So, yeah, but there, have you ever, you know, when a barn owl eats the whole animal, swallow it down, but they can't obviously digest all the bones and the feathers and all the bits and that. So they have this super system, all birds of prey, for regurgitating the little pellets. So they make a little pellet inside. The barn owl ones tend to be quite dark in colour, black generally, and it's just a mash of bits of feathers and bones and anything they couldn't digest, and they will literally just
cough that back up.
Yeah, I've actually seen it happen in real life. Yeah, wow. I have, a long time ago actually, and not in Ireland, but and they literally just pop it back up, and it comes out, it doesn't smell of anything, it's quite dry when it comes out, and it's just, and you can look, if you look at it, you'll see tiny little bones, and you'll, if you want, it's a nice thing for kids to do actually, you can check and see what they've been eating.
Right.
So they'll do that about 6 hours after they've eaten.
So rather than it pass through their system, they kind of cough the bits that they can't digest back up.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and different birds will have different kind of looking pellets, different colours and different shapes and that. And after a night's hunting, they possibly could cough up two little pellets. So they might be the size of maybe a big man's thumb kind of thing. That sort of size. It's kind of fascinating, isn't it?
It really is.
And it's a great way to check their diet. That would be
to see what they're eating in a particular area.
Yeah.
Now, there are losses of them along motorways and roads, aren't there?
There's a study happening at the moment into the impact of the motorways on their numbers. Mm. So there isn't any results of that study. But I imagine it does disrupt habitats, you know, hedges are cut off. So and they would have a biggish range at night when they're feeding and that. So anyway, I suppose we'll hear at some stage shortly, or not shortly, but in a little while, about how that study goes.
Now, I was saying last week that only once did I have a barn owl visitor out at Crowan. And I was thinking about it afterwards. Only once did I see a barn owl out there, because I had the lights on, I was sitting outside, and this white ghost-like bird,
yes,
you know,
yeah,
flew past me. But there was absolutely no sound.
Yeah,
it was silent. Mm. So since we were talking last week, I've been thinking, I wonder how many times have I been sitting outside or walking along and an owl has passed just behind me, and of course you don't hear it.
No.
So we were listening to those birds down on the slobs today, and when a goose or a swan is in flight, it's noisy. But the owl, remarkably, makes not a sound.
I remember seeing a study last year or the year before, and they were looking at the noise level compared to from a pigeon to a barn owl, and the barn owl was so silent, and the pigeon makes an awful lot of flapping. But you see, a pigeon feeds on seed, so it's not going to frighten anything away. Yeah. The barn owl has to be absolutely silent when it's feeding at night.
Of course, because it's coming in to pick up a small little
animal with very big ears, probably.
Yes.
So, but there was a project that has been running in Kilkenny for a last while, and I know some of the guys in Birdwatch. Some of the guys we met actually out at the murmuration the other day, they were erecting nest boxes and roosting sites around the county. And anecdotally, there isn't results back in yet. They say the numbers have come back up a little bit.
Now, there is a very particular shape of nest box for the barn owl, isn't there? And a lot of people who are in the what was the REP scheme, now the GLOS scheme, they're encouraged to put up these boxes to provide a nesting area for barn owls.
They're quite big.
They are, they're big.
And they go in up high and then they go down and nest below.
Yeah. So it's a large box, probably about 800 mil in wide, 800 mil high and deep. So it's a big, big box, and they kind of like to go into it with a bit of a ledge and then drop down into a space inside where they raise the young. And they like that to be at a height, and ideally in a barn.
Yes.
You know, there's a reason why they got their name, I suppose.
And that's where they would have, you know, nested in old barns or in kind of in the trunks of trees, you know, in a kind of a cavern or something in a tree.
Mm. There aren't too many of those old trees lying around, you see, anymore.
No. And even old barns.
Yes, there aren't.
There are not as many. So,
no, and things are getting blocked off now to provide better shelter to the animals and so on. And without a decent spot for them to nest, they just won't. They'll move on, you know. Mm. Now, I've been meaning for years to put up a Barnell box out at my place, but do you know what? I'm going to do it this year. New resolution.
You could make it.
Now, do you have much more to tell us about the Barnell? Because I'm terrified to cut you off. But
one
we
more
need
thing.
To do the
this
ads.
Is the last thing.
Okay.
So the numbers have been increasing and stuff, and then obviously you've tried and work out why the numbers are increasing. And one thing that may possibly have been impacting it is the spread of the white-toothed shrew, which is a little shrew that came into the country back in 2010, you were telling me earlier.
So it came in the hay that we had to import from France because of the fodder shortage that was caused by the big snow.
Yes.
The big freeze.
Okay.
So we had to bring in all of that hay from France. And in the bales of hay came along this white-toothed shrew.
And these shrews are about twice the size of our little shrew.
The pygmy shrew, yeah.
Pygmy shrew. So, and they are pushing our little shrews out.
As is often the case with these invasive chaps, yeah.
It is, yeah. But the barn owls seem to be feeding on them.
Uh-huh, okay.
So that may be increasing. Now, I did read again that there was some question about the nutritional value of the larger shrew in comparison to the smaller one, but I'm not sure about that. But that does seem to be causing an increase in the number of barnells.
Isn't it funny how these things have an impact? So,
isn't it so funny? Yeah. Like, you don't really want them, you know, you don't want them because they're pushing out the smaller shrew, but yeah. It may be nice that they're actually bringing back the Barnell numbers. So, but I suppose it's all about balance, isn't it?
There may be an equilibrium struck at some point, but we may be talking about the little pygmy shrew at some point in the future, like we're talking about the red squirrel that, you know, it's just on islands and so on because its bigger cousin from the continent has forced it away.
Perhaps.
I know that Peggy out at Crowan, I've mentioned it on the show several times, Peggy is not doing her bit to help the pygmy shrew population. Peggy the dog can sniff a pygmy shrew at 50 metres and isn't happy until she digs down and finds the poor little creature, and then she plays with it for a little while. I've never seen her go after anything other than pygmy shrews.
Mad,
it's nice to know
it?
That they're out there, but I really wish she'd leave them alone.
She might keep a check on the spread of the white-toothed ones.
Of the white-toothed one, yeah. Okay, we better take an ad break now. We're a bit late going to the ads. Thanks very much for that on the Barnells and stuff. Now, coming up after the break, we're going to be talking to Declan Gilmore, friend of this parish. He's been on the show a couple of times talking to us. And he's the Nude Nutritionist, Nude Nutrition online and on Instagram and on Twitter. We're going to be talking to him about New Year's resolutions, new diets and nutrition in the new year. We'll be back just after these. Text us on 086 353 7782.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're very welcome back to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I am Francis Nesbitt from Crowan Cottages and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey, and we're live today, Friday, from 4 to 5, and the show is repeated on Mondays from 4 to 5. While we're on air and in the studio, we'd love you to drop us a text to 086 353 7782, or at any stage during the week you can send us in an email, kitchengarden@crkc.ie. Now, it's the start of the year and a lot of people have started off a diet to lose a little bit of weight, or are enjoying a dry January, or dare I even mention the Veganuary thing that's getting a lot of coverage online and in the newspapers. All of that is intended to kind of make us feel better about ourselves and maybe even make ourselves look good. But I'm joined on the line now by Declan Gilmore, who is a nutritionist and sports performance coach. And if any man should know how best we can help ourselves in the new year, it should be Declan. Declan, how are you?
Very good. How are you? Happy New Year to you guys.
And Happy New Year. Thanks again for joining us on the show.
No problem, you're very welcome.
So now, Declan, we're just saying it's the time of the year where lots of people are kind of kicking off diets, they're trying to lose a bit of weight and so on, and the vast majority of those attempts end in failure, unfortunately. What are people doing wrong?
They do. 95% of diets that people start now will end in failure. Mm. And they're not my figures, they're the figures from the Weight Watchers and all these big multinational companies. That is a fact of life. The problem with it is, Francis, as you said, we've enjoyed Christmas, we've all had a great time eating turkey and ham, mince pies, and had a few sherries, and we then decide we're going to do everything in the new year, we're just going to cut everything out, and it just doesn't happen. Your body just says, no, this is not going to happen. After 3 or 4 weeks, you just can't do it. The secret to it is, and it's not a secret, it's common sense, is to do it gradually. Start gradually, you know, start walking. Don't start going to the gym and start trying to lift 250 kilo weights off your head. Don't try and run a marathon. Don't give up every bit of food that you like. stick to the kind of 80-20 rule, where 80% you're eating good and 20% you can enjoy yourself. You have to have that slice of birthday cake and that, you know, that drink or whatever if you want to have it. Don't try and kill yourself. If you want to look like the people on Instagram and these people that are on these social media platforms, then you want to give up 95% of your social life. That's your decision.
But just take photographs.
That's not what I want to do. So it's gradual. It's small steps. I mean, I work with sports people and even the top sports people. What they aim for is 1% better every time they do something. That's all they look for. They're not looking for huge, big changes. The four pillars that I talk about, which we're looking to try and get 1% better in, is nutrition, exercise, water, and sleep.
Okay.
If you get those 1% better all the time, then that'll absolutely add to your well-being. You're going to have a lot of people throwing things at you and a lot of gyms doing membership and all these groups saying, come and join us and stuff like that. The problem with them is that they give you a generic menu or generic food and it just doesn't work. I don't even speak to people until they do a 2-week diary for me.
Okay.
There's just no point. Because I don't know what people like, I don't know what they eat, I don't know, do they cook themselves, do they eat out, all that kind of stuff. All that has to be, that has to be all taken into consideration if you're going to do work properly with people. Something that has to be sustainable.
Okay.
You can all lose weight very, very quickly, but
it's keeping it off, it really
it's
is the issue,
it
isn't
off,
it?
Is yeah. That is the secret, you know.
Now, those four pillars that you said again, they were...
It's great because it spells news.
It took me
a lot of time to change the words around to spell news. I was spelling screw and new and now. So it's nutrition, exercise, water, and sleep.
Okay.
There's loads of other things. There's all sorts of, mindfulness and stuff, and all those things will fall in place. But if you can get those four pillars right, you're on a good start and you have a really good foundation then.
And by nutrition then, what is it that you're looking at there? Is it that you're getting in all of the things that you need or that you're counting calories?
No. Unless you're going to be doing some kind of a physique competition or you are a sports person and you want to do something, you're cutting weight for a fight or for something, you do not need to be counting calories.
Okay.
If you're eating good whole foods, particularly, and I know it's not easy for everybody, but cook as much as you can at home because then you know what's going into it. The vegetables, the meats, the fishes, all that kind of good stuff. I know we've lots and lots of people are going vegan, and look, that's fine, but that's a very, very difficult thing to do properly. Mm. Really difficult thing to do properly. If you're going to go vegan, it's a lot of work, it's a lot of time, a lot of effort. There's a lot of nutrients and vitamins and minerals that you're missing out on. If that's your choice, go for it. That's up to you. But
not that I like to slate it myself, Dec, but I heard another nutritionist speaking, being interviewed just during the week, and they were asked, can a vegan get every mineral and vitamin that they need from a vegan diet? And the answer they were given were, yes, if they take supplements. So the answer essentially is no.
It isn't. Yeah. the big thing, and I don't really want to go on, go down a kind of a tangent of it, but the vegan thing. But the big thing is vitamin B12.
Yeah.
And there's huge links to vitamin B12 and to dementia, to Alzheimer's, so all this kind of neurological things. And you cannot get that from anything except from a supplement or from meat.
Mm.
But look, as I said, people are, they're adults, they have choices, and they can make that choice. My belief is that, you have your meats, your fishes, good quality, as local as possible as you can, a seasonal fruit and veg, strawberries from Egypt. How much nutrients are in strawberries from Egypt at this time of the year? Eat the fruit and veg that are there, that are available to us. That's what our bodies are designed to eat. They will get all the nutrients out of that. And again, as I said, the 80-20 rule, 20% of the time, enjoy yourself, have a dessert, don't go mad. But what you will find happening is that if you're moving in all the good stuff, the good vegetables and stuff, you won't want to be looking for the rubbish at night. Like that's the time that a lot of people really, really suffer in the evening time when they sit down to watch the telly. They start nibbling, the packet of biscuits comes out with the tea and stuff like that. There's only one solution to that, and that is not to have it in the house. And I know it's a very easy thing to say, but if you go out on a Saturday or Sunday for a cup of coffee and you get a slice of cake, the chances of you going back up and saying, can I get another slice of that cake in front of everyone in the coffee shop is very slim. But if you have that cake at home, I have never done that. Not unless you're paying. But the chances of, if you have that cake at home in your fridge, the chances of you going back to the fridge for the second slice are very, very high.
Yeah. Or what I see them doing,
it's as simple as that.
In my house, there's one girl who will actually go back and just take little bits off it. So
slowly,
until it's really all gone.
Well, then,
that is not me. I'm not talking about me.
Now, well, fair play to her, because most people don't have that kind of willpower. So look, absolutely, have your treats, but you know, they should be treats. They shouldn't be everyday occurrences. They're not a treat if you're having them every single day. Mm. But you have to live, you have to enjoy yourself. So that's the nutrition side of it. The exercise then simply has to be walking, cycling, whatever you want to do, running. There's a big thing now, which is called NEAT, which is, this is a long-winded way of saying, it's non-exercise activity thermogenesis, which all it means is moving. But it's not an actual specific exercise. So you go to the gym, you do your exercise, but non-exercise is when you're walking, when you're cycling to the shops, or, you know, instead of bringing the car, that kind of stuff. That will burn more calories than actually going to the gym and trying to kill yourself for half an hour, because you're on your feet, you're moving all the time, and your metabolism is working all the time. So just getting out walking. The weather's been phenomenal, as you guys know. You've probably been talking about it. There's, you know, the daffodils are blooming. I know it's kind of a bit mad, but it's absolutely phenomenal. Get out at lunchtime and go for a half an hour walk. It could do you much better than going to the gym and trying to kill yourself lifting weights.
On the exercise thing, one thing I heard, and particularly specifically about the gym memberships, somebody made a point to me a couple of weeks ago that when you take out a gym membership, it's a big kind of commitment. And for those who can't get to the gym as often as they'd like, it actually becomes an oppressive factor. So there's something in your head saying, I should be doing it. And because you can't, it actually makes you feel bad about yourself. So rather than doing something to kind of make yourself feel better, it ends up depressing.
Do something good. Instead of making a New Year's resolution to give up something, make a resolution to take up something.
Yeah, very good.
That's the thing. But I mean, like, I have stuff at home. I don't go to the gym for the simple reason that there's not one near me. I don't have time to do it. Mm. But you can buy the little analogies of this world have little small weights that you can have at home. Or these resistance bands are brilliant, mm-hmm. you know, for people to do stuff at home. 15, 20 minutes. It is very good to do kind of resistance training or some kind of that kind of exercise where you're building up muscles, because that is for everything, for bone strength, for muscle mm-hmm. strength. It's phenomenal. It really is good. I was actually just speaking to a girl today who literally couldn't walk. She was at one of these gym classes. She literally wanted to know what was she going to do for her legs. She couldn't move them after going to the thing. Because she went in there, you say people go to the gym, they see others lifting and running and doing stuff, but they're on their day 2000, you're on your day one, and you're comparing yourself to there, and she literally nearly killed herself. She could hardly walk after it. So that's another thing people do, little small, getting back to the start, gradual little small steps. You know, don't try and run a marathon straight away, walk first.
A friend of mine coined a phrase that he does a little bit of resistance work, so he does a little bit of weight work and just some press-ups as well, because every day he does a bit of exercise like that, he thinks that he's fooling gravity. So there's a part of his body that's not heading south. I really stuck in my head. I thought that was very good.
Yeah, he could be right.
Yeah.
Any of that body weight, you know, a lot of people can't do press-ups, so don't try and do a full press-up. Do it against a table or a stable chair, so you're not flat on the ground, and do it that way.
But just get the muscles working.
Any bit of movement.
Yeah.
Any bit of movement is going to be phenomenal.
Now the third pillar is water.
Is water, yeah. So water is something, and I work with sports people who don't even drink enough water, and some of the guys I work with will be on county teams who you would expect to know this kind of thing. It's frightening how little water people drink. We need 2 to 2.5 litres of water a day. If you're exercising, if you're moving around, that. And it's like everything becomes a habit. Have a bottle of water, have a little bottle with you all the time, and just sip and sip and sip, rather than trying to take, you know, a litre of it just before you go to bed, which is not quite.
I tell you, Dick, the line between yourself and ourselves now could do with a bit of exercise in the new year. The quality of the line is kind of deteriorating there. Can we go on? It's just getting a bit worse. It's getting a bit tired. The last one then, of course, is sleep.
It's sleep. Huge, absolutely huge. Sleep is absolutely crucial to all the
And I think that phone line has just gone to sleep there now. That's such a shame. That is such a shame. But listen, I strongly recommend, if you don't already, that you follow Declan Gilmore on Twitter, if you're on Twitter. He's at nudenutrition.ie and on Instagram, nudenutrition.ie. And what I like about Dec online is that he's not very, very preachy, and he's not somebody who puts up a photograph of himself every day standing on his head on the beach at dawn. You know, it's all kind of sensible advice.
He eats good food, actually.
And he eats good, hearty kind of food. That if you have a look at it, you'll find very familiar if you're a regular listener to this show, because it's kind of the stuff that we all talk about. But a huge thank you to Dec there, and I'm sorry that the phone line kind of broke down towards the end. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take our second ad break, and then coming up after the ad break, it's all about nature and the garden. So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
You can email the show, kitchengarden@ckc.ie.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're very welcome back to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm Francis Nesbitt, and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey, and we're live today up until 5 o'clock, and the show is repeated on Monday from 4 to 5. And you can get in touch by text to 086 353 7782, as we have had a couple of texts in, mostly about veganism, actually, and criticising what they perceive to be our critique of veganism. I am not giving out about vegans. I'm not giving out about the vegan diet. All I'm saying is that you need to go into it with a bit of knowledge, because if you just switch straight to veganism and don't take supplements, it's not going to be very good for your health. You do need to take supplements, specifically about the omega oils and the vitamin B12, as Dec mentioned. So be sure to do your research if you're going to make that choice. And actually, Mags, we might, as veganism is so topical, we might at some point in the near future do a slot on it.
Yes, we might.
And have a look at the science behind it. But a big thanks to Dec again for joining us, and sorry that the phone line broke down there towards the end of our chat. But all common sense stuff, I think, from Dec.
Dec is
really
all common sense. Yeah, good food.
Yeah.
Just eat lots of good food. It doesn't have to be, once it's not rubbish food. And when I just meant to get in and say, well, we're talking about root vegetables earlier, which is exactly what you should be eating at this time of the year. He makes absolute sense.
So he's all about
I'd love to have heard what he had to say about sleep, though.
Get more of it.
I'm not a great sleeper.
No.
So he might have had some tips.
Get more of it, and you know, to keep the device out of the room, and limit your exposure to blue light before you go to bed. Sleep in a slightly cool environment. You know, those kind of things, which we're all better at kind of saying than we are doing. But I've had a great chat with Charlie recently after he had a brilliant night's sleep one night. He was telling me this is my 12-year-old boy, and he was saying, don't you just feel so much better after a great sleep? And if the 12-year-old has copped it, like, we all know it. You know, we should really do what all we can to improve it. Now, earlier this week, we experienced one of nature's wonderful phenomena.
We really did.
We did, in a place called Ballyhale, not a million miles from Kilkenny City. About 4 or 5 minutes away from your house, maybe 15 or 20 minute drive from Kilkenny City. A near Mountain View golf course. Anybody who's familiar with Kiltorkin, the racetrack, out that direction towards Ballyhale. And we'd received news that a murmuration, so a large gathering of starlings, was forming out there. And when we went out, you saw it first, and thanks very much for passing on the tip. But when we went out, thousands of birds.
Well, yeah, it could be, you know, 50 or 60,000. You're making an absolute guesstimation and stuff. But and the only way to actually get the number is you'd have to get a photograph of the whole murmuration and then divide it into grids, try and do a count of each grid and then add them up. But the first day I went out, I went to the golf club because that's where I'd heard they were, and I was kind of sitting there looking around, and I saw a couple of flocks, small flocks of maybe 20, 30, 40 birds. But they're all kind of going in one direction, so I followed them and found them just up the road. But it took me, you know, and then suddenly there's like thousands and thousands of birds. So they're all flying together in kind of like a fluid, how would you describe it? Mount of
anybody who's seen a swarm of bees move from a hive to their new home will be familiar with that kind of concept of a see-through cloud that's constantly moving, made up of individual little creatures. Well, imagine that swarm spread over probably a kilometer wide area of sky, maybe 600-700 meters of sky.
Yeah,
and constantly in movement, because these birds can't hover, so they are all flying around. But miraculously, areas of that murmuration or cloud of birds all bank and turn at the same time.
Yeah.
So you see sweeps from light grey through mid-grey to black as suddenly the back of the bird is exposed to you, ripple across the entire cloud of birds.
On the first day, I was actually under it for a while, which is not a safe place to be. To be honest, you'd need a hat on your head,
yes,
like
of course,
absolutely.
Of course.
But and you could see kind of the layers of them.
Yes,
and they don't touch off each other. They're all flying. Apparently, they're watching seven birds on, you know, on average and stuff. Mm. They can see the seven around them, but they're all flying like it's mad. You know, if you think of like if we all went running around a yard together, we'd all crash into each other.
Yeah.
But they don't, nobody quite knows why they do this. Apparently they exchange information or something, but nobody actually knows really why they do it.
I was looking at it, it just looked like brilliant crack, so maybe they're just doing it for the sport.
Yeah, but also I noticed this was kind of when they were above me as well, that you could hear the wing beat, but there wasn't an awful lot of chatter. So if you think of that number of birds, it would be nearly a deafening sound. There wasn't an awful lot of chatter, and the chatter what was there seems to get less as it gets darker before they go into roost. But that murmuration apparently had been missing from the area for 22 years, and it just appeared back in the last 2 or 3 years.
Anybody who's listening now who's in the Kilkenny area and who can, before the weather breaks, so we never know when these murmurations will kind of dissipate and they'll all head back to wherever they spend most of their days and not come together again. But maybe until the weather breaks, there's an opportunity if you head out at around 4:30, between 4:30 and 5:30, out near Ballyhale, near the Mountain View Golf Course, heading kind of parallel to the main road, a little further south, there's some woods in on the left-hand side, and that's where they were gathering there. It is really, really worth seeing.
It is. And apparently the birds could be coming from Wexford, Waterford, Tipperary, all gathering there.
Poland. So a lot of the...
Well, exactly, they do. It's the wintering birds and the native birds all gather up together for this in harmony.
So it's incredible. So not only do we have small localised flocks of starlings who gather together and roost together, and you can see the benefits of roosting together, just like with the bees. If you get together close at night, you share a little bit of your body heat, and when you have that many birds roosting in an area at the same amount of time, they actually raise the temperature locally by 1 or 2 degrees, which is incredible. Mm. That would make a big difference to a small creature like that. But while it's still gathering and stuff in Ballyhale, if you get the chance at all, every listener should go out and see one. And there are pictures online and lots of videos on YouTube and on the Crowan Cottages Facebook page. I put up a small video, and on Twitter at Nesbitt F and on Twitter at Mags Morrissey, both of us put up photographs of it. The photographs are lovely. The video is really, really nice. The video where they all kind of descended from the sky all of a sudden and went and roosted. I really, really like that.
As the evening, they were quite dispersed. Like there was a huge, but they actually kind of tightened up and tightened. And they did a different sort of a swirl, kind of like a sort of an S kind of shape in that. And some of the little, kind of a narrow band of birds kind of flying.
It was almost like a funnel. So as they gathered and tightened and then suddenly swept down through the funnel onto the tree. But while those videos are lovely and the photographs are lovely, I really recommend that if you can at all, you grab somebody young and bring them along with you and go have a look at it. Because
I've been out there 3 times now, I have to confess, this week.
My two were amazed by it. Martha brought along the camera that Santa brought her, and she took some photographs, and beautiful photographs. But to see that and to hear it. It's not silent. The wing beats, you can actually hear it.
And we don't know whether it'll be back again next year or not. It could be another 20, whatever.
I have wanted for years and years and years and years to see it. I didn't realise until this year that there were areas that they tended to happen. So I was always hoping that I would be in a place where one of these murmurations passed over. And a friend of mine, after I put up the photographs on Twitter, he was just on the motorway in Cork. He joined the M8 and a murmuration happened over his head. Pure fluke.
There's one in Leash too, one near Cullahill actually. And apparently that one had been missing for years too, and it's now back in that area.
I wonder, is it because starling numbers are increasing or something? But I do know that generally up until this year, overall their numbers are down by 80%. That's 80%.
Starlings?
80% starling numbers are down by that much.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
in Ballyhale this week.
Well, that's a huge drop, but Ballyhale this week, it is something that's really worth seeing. So head along and do that. Now, we wanted to talk a little bit about the garden, but maybe to put us in the mood for spring, I came across a gorgeous little poem by a woman called Alice Oswald, and she's writing about the snowdrop, and there's a man called Sir Andrew Motion. Lord of Mercy, he died back in 2015, but he's the ex-poet laureate in the UK, and he reads this poem, I think, rather beautifully.
Which unseasonally is about a snowdrop. But you all know what a snowdrop looks like, so you can call it to mind. A pale and pining girl, head bowed, heart gnawed, whose figure nods and shivers in a shawl of fine white wool, has suddenly appeared in the damp woods, as mild and mute as snowfall. She may not last. She has no strength at all, but stoops and shakes as if she'd stood all night on one bare foot, confiding with the moonlight. One among several hundred clear-eyed ghosts who get up in the cold and blink and turn into these trembling emblems of night frosts, she brings her burnt heart with her in an urn of ashes, which she opens to re-mourn, having no other outlet to express her wildflower sense of wounded gentleness. Yes, she's no more now than a drop of snow on a green stem. Her name is now her calling. Her mind is just a frozen, melting glow of water, swollen to the point of falling, which maybe has no meaning. There's no telling. But what a beauty, what a mighty power of patience kept intact is now in flower.
Isn't that a lovely
That's
little
beautiful,
poem?
Yeah.
Really, really nice.
I saw my first snowdrops today, actually, at home.
Wow.
Yeah.
There have been reports of them being very, very early this year. I don't have any up out at Croan yet. But
apparently there's daffodils out in some parts of the country, actually.
Not a million miles away, near Knocktover. I've seen some daffodils in flower. Yeah, which is remarkable in January. It's only the 11th of January today. Snowdrops I do love, though, because normally when they pop their heads up, it's still very, very cold, and you're a bit sick of the cold and looking forward to spring.
It's a promise of spring, isn't it?
Really is. Yeah. Beautiful little flowers, but that's a nice little poem there. And that's by Alice Oswald, and it's simply called Snowdrop. Now, speaking of flowers and things to kind of do in the garden, it's kind of prepped time now, I think, in the garden. I know Hugh was telling us last week that take it easy and enjoy and so on. But before you know it, things will start to grow and jobs will be upon us. And one of the things I struggle with during the year is getting those kind of regular, boring maintenance jobs done. Because as plants and the weeds around them are growing, you tend to get distracted towards them. And you know, the weeding needs done, or something needs doing with the spuds, or, you know, certain things have to be done or they'll get on top of you. And you tend maybe not to get the time to look after some of the moss that's grown on paths, or a wall which maybe needs a bit of ivy pulled off it, or even a little bit of painting if you can do it. So I think now is an ideal time to do some of that work.
Or clean up your shed or something like that. Clean up your pots, throw out ones that are broken, or do little clean jobs like that. That's on my list, actually. And I also need to do my raspberries. I have promised you raspberries and stuff.
Yes,
but I never do them until end of January, February.
But while things aren't kind of growing around you, if you're able to get some of those jobs out of the way, then they're not sitting there like those little dimmer switches buzzing away in the back of your head.
That's true.
The things that you need.
And the weather's reasonably nice at the moment to get out, actually.
It is. And there is a bit of a stretch in the evenings. Like when we leave here now this evening at 5 o'clock, it won't be completely dark. So dusk, I think, this evening is 5:28 or something like that. Yeah.
Wow,
so now sunset was sometime just after 4:30, 4:45. But dusk won't set in until almost 5:30. So it is nice off the weekend if you're able to get out and about for a few hours. Knock a few of them jobs off the list. So tidy up some of your flower pots. Get some of your seed trays in order and clean. Make sure you have some seed compost, because every year the first time I go to sow some seeds, I realise I've no seed compost ready. So if you make your own, now's the good time to be sifting it. That's a great job, actually, at this time of the year, if you want a bit of exercise outside on a cold day.
Oh, yeah.
So go to the compost, go to the leaf mould cage and start to riddle some of that. And any of the larger leaves that are kind of left can just go into this year's leaf mould.
Right.
I'll be doing it from mould that's 2 years old now. And over a wheelbarrow, I'll simply be riddling that into a very, very fine tilt. So very, very fine grained compost, because that's what my seeds are all going to go into. So I don't want a large lump of leaf mould blocking a seed.
And where will you store that then?
I put it into bags.
Okay.
So old plastic bags or feed bags, that's where I put it into that. And then it's ready for me. Keep it dry if you can, because it can get too soggy and too heavy. So I'll put it into a few feed sacks and I'll keep it in the potting shed. And then as it's time to sow the seeds, out comes that bag of leaf mould. And it's perfect for seed sowing because there's very little nutrition in it. And so it provides a substrate for the seedling to get its roots down into. So it has a good root system that are then able to provide nutrients for the leaf growth at a later stage when you pot it on.
When you pot it on, yeah. Yeah, perfect.
So make sure, if you're not producing your own, make sure that you've bought some seed and potting compost so that it's there when it is time to get sowing. I know a lot of people will be telling you that it's too early to be sowing things now, but if you do have a heated propagation tray, or if you have a greenhouse that's a little warm, or some way of keeping it warm, January is always a good time to get started on your chili peppers, if you're able to sow some chili seeds, because they need a very, very long growing season if you want to get a good crop from them. So our friend Tongi probably sowed his chili seeds on the 1st of January, and any time in the month of January, if you're able to keep them warm, so that's above kind of 15 degrees at their roots, in order for them to, at some stage during the day, in order for them to emerge. That's what I recommend you do there. So do some cleaning, do some preparation, and along with that preparation, then there may be some vegetables or unusual varieties that you want to grow this year that won't be available in the local garden centre. Obviously, we'd encourage you to go local and check it out first. But if there are some unusual things that you'd like to get, maybe from Seed Savers or Brown Envelope Seeds down in Cork, or from some of the specialist growers, it may be that you need to go online to do that. And having them there ready to go is always better than looking for them when you have the time to actually do the sowing. So it maybe there's some planning to be done and some purchasing online to be done as well. And the ground is reasonably dry. I've been up on the beds in the garden and they are dry enough to kind of walk on and work on.
So you could plan out your beds if you want to beds or anything like that.
You could.
I actually noticed I need to do some weeding in some places, lots of places actually. So it is time to do that sort of thing.
Massive amount of chickweed out in my place at the moment. Not at all worried about it. Very, very easy to kind of pull up, and I'd rather have something on the brown earth than nothing. But I did spot a couple of thistles, which obviously took hold at the end of last year, and I want to get them out of there as soon as possible. So while the ground is workable and I'm not distracted by something else, I'll get the fork underneath them, get down as deep as I can, and make sure I get all of them out. They're fine up in the hedgerows where the butterflies love them and stuff, but not in the middle of my veg bed. I want them gone. Give you nasty little splinters. But look, that's enough jobs for this week, and we've run out of time in the kitchen garden for another week. And thank you very much to everybody for listening to the show. You can keep in touch with us during the week on Twitter at Nesbitt F or at Mags Morrissey, or you can email kitchengarden at